Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Ladies and gentlemen, absolutely fantastic. 134 episodes in. Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here. We are live and in living color, funking like a monkey, if you will. I am Chris Featherstone, as always, with my Pancakes and Power Slams co-host, Derek. How are you today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chris. How you doing tonight, Pancakes and Power Slam? We are here. Live, and like you said, in living color, or I'm sorry, Dusty Rhodes, he's in the studio tonight, so kudos to that. Great times tonight. We got some Flavor of the Weeks coming up. We have a couple that we're going to talk about. Still, we're focusing on Hell in a Cell, but we got a couple different ones tonight we want to talk about. 347-884-8452. We got the chat room up live going. Tweet. At Crave Wrestling, this is what we do, Chris. We got to 90 minutes. It's never enough, but we'll be going to make of it tonight.
Absolutely. That's what we do. Special shout-out to my boys over at WeAreWrestling.net. Wonderful people over there. Very supportive, very fun and exciting group of people over there. I really appreciate WeAreWrestling.net. And the funny part is, I love talking to people who love their wrestling. I mean, I really do. And the forum over there, because Pancakes and Power Slams is streaming live over at WeAreWrestling.net, and some good people that can compete with you, Derek, as far as the trivia is concerned. I love wrestling trivia. This is the 134th episode. And even with that, love trivia. I've written trivia for just about every episode, and they come from the top of my head. And it's funny how I only have a few people in my life. I know a lot of wrestling fans, but there's only a few people that I know in my life that, and admittedly, for the most part, Derek, you're one of them. But only a few people in my life that really knows their wrestling trivia. And, I mean, come on. We are wrestling fans, and a lot of us have been following wrestling for, 20-plus years. And we need to let people know how good we are in our pro wrestling. That's why I have trivia every single week. It's worth it adds an extra layer to the uniqueness of Pancakes and Power Slams. And it just really gives people the opportunity to show how much they know about their wrestling trivia, about pro wrestling in general. So special shout out to RealWrestling.net. We had some really good comments and really good answers and some people who knew their stuff for sure. So absolutely fantastic. Great job. And perfect segue to that. First trivia question for tonight is, what was Tori Wilson's dad's name? What was Tori Wilson's dad's name? As Derek says, every week, 90 minutes is never enough. We are going to talk about, of course, Hell in a Cell, whatever our thoughts was about Raw, and, of course, we have our predictions tonight, as we do before every pay-per-view. We have our predictions, and, of course, follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. Like I said, streaming live on WeAreWrestling.net, BleacherReport.com, and just continue to do that. Good job. See, there you go. Al Wilson was the person. I'm starting to give people some love, too. John Crisp over at RiaWrestling.net live stream. Kudos to John Crisp. And I'm also going to give some love to people who answered right on Twitter, at Crave Wrestling, and also through our other media streams that we have, too, Facebook at Crave Wrestling as well. All right, let's get in. Before we go to Raw, we're going to do something very interesting tonight. We're going to give Derek, see, Derek is a traditionalist. We're going to give Derek some love as far as letting us know about something, because we usually do the Flavor of the Week at the end of the show, and we're going to do that as well. Last week we talked about Cactus Jack versus Triple H, Hell in a Cell. The past month we've been on a series of talking about some of the best Hell in a Cell matches of all time. Today we're going to cover two. We're going to cover the two of my favorites, actually my two favorites, the Armageddon Hell in a Cell from 2000, and also the Hell in a Cell at 1998 King of the Ring between, of course, you know, Undertaker and Mick Foley, Mankind. Those are my two favorite Hell in a Cell matches. I also like we talked about a couple weeks ago, Shawn Michaels and Triple H from Bad Blood 2000. I was actually there, so I enjoyed that from a live standpoint. We're going to talk about, and let us know through all the streams of media that's going on live right now that's hosting the show, let us know about your view on a concept a long time ago. And I thought about this as we're talking about Hell in a Cell. It was originated by Dusty Rhodes, my boy, Dusty Rhodes. And it was called the Bunkhouse Stampede. Now, very interesting concept that the Bunkhouse Stampede had. And I'm going to turn it over to Derek to talk about the Bunkhouse Stampede and how that had a effect on cage matches and matches with cage match stipulations from there on out. So let us know about the Bunkhouse Stampede, Derek.
The Bunkhouse Stampede is kind of like the Royal Rumble on steroids. Typically, something that the concept was great. It's kind of like a street fight. It's a battle royal. It went on for, I think, about 4 or 5 years. Started in 85, and kind of went on to really gravitate to something you don't think about anymore. I mean, it was an awesome concept, an awesome idea, and it was a tables, ladders, chair, except it was over the top rope, you'd be eliminated. However, they would come out in street clothes, jeans. Back then, they wore cowboy hats and bandanas and all that good stuff. But it was something really, it was really ahead of its time. I mean, but back then, you know, NWA especially, man, they would bleed a lot in those, and they would blade. They would do what they had to do to really make the effect. They were very much more emotionally connected, I think, than WWE was. But with this match alone, this spectacle, and one thing I remember about this is me being a kid in the mid-80s, I didn't get to see cable TV. I didn't have it. I lived out in the podunk town of Ohio, and I had to rely on video stores and my friends taping stuff off their cable, and they'd come over and we'd watch it. And I remember the Bunkhouse Stampede was one of those where I saw it at the video store. It wasn't Blockbuster. It was some little small rinky-dink video store. It was probably 2 or 3 years old at the time. Bunkhouse Stampede, the first one was. But man, that was my favorite video to get. Loved it, loved it. This is back in the days of VHS. And I remember last week I went on a tirade about how you don't have magazines anymore to kind of hype the product that you just didn't get to see. And videotapes did that a lot as well. And with the WWE Network now, everything's at your fingertips, and that's a thing that everybody knows my stance on that. I love the idea, and if I had the WWE Network, I would never leave my house. That's my only problem. But with tapes, magazines, DVDs, but again, not to go off topic, Bunkhouse Stampede, again, was the hardcore matches that were in a battle royal. And I would love to see something like that again. You get similar to it with tables, ladders, and chairs. However, they get to go all over the place and not just keep it centered in the ring. And again, just the brutal violence that was back then, and especially in the Southern Territories, the NWA, and anything with Dusty Rhodes. I mean, look at the guy. He's scarred from head to toe. So, awesome concept, awesome idea. And you could probably find it on the WWE Network if you look for it. However, I mean, just the grittiness of it. I mean, that was absolutely perfect in its time and its day. Couldn't do that now. You couldn't get away with that now. You can get away with so much stuff these days. But when it comes to wrestling, you better not cut yourself or bleed, or if you do. But anyway, I'm in a place, but it was a beautiful, beautiful time.
Absolutely. It was several weapons, and it was, like I said, it was Dusty Rhodes' creation. It was his baby. NWA, it started back in 1995. Great synopsis there. And it only lasted, 4 years altogether. And funny enough, Dusty Rhodes won all four of them. So it was very, very interesting. I guess it showed how much it was his creation, the very fact that he won it. So it was quite interesting. So, all right, next trivia question we have. This wrestler was known as the Portuguese Man of War. This wrestler was known as the Portuguese Man of War. Let us know the answers to that. all right, so let's get into Raw. I don't understand how important it is to. I've said many, many times that this product that I've seen now with Raw is just no good. Just incredible. John Crisp is on it. Absolutely. Kind of. Slightly just incredible. Not necessarily. It is just incredible. The same person, but what was his name when he was the Portuguese Man of War? What was his name when he was the Portuguese Man of War? So let's get to Raw. We got a lot to cover tonight, of course, and we'll start off with Raw. With Triple H with an in-ring promo underneath the Hell in a Cell structure. And, of course, by the cell being up and ready in the Kansas City, Missouri crowd, of course, going, salivating for it to come down. I knew that it was going to come down, and I was like, man, I wish we don't have, like, a dark match Hell in a Cell that we did it like we did a few years back with the five-man Hell in a Cell that was between... Let's see how good I am in my own trivia. John Cena was defending it. It was a dark match after the show, and it was leading to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view that was coming on that weekend. And it was John Cena defending. It was a five-man Hell in a Cell. John Cena defending against Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, Jack Swagger, and CM Punk. There you go. Those were their five people. And the match lasted all but 5 minutes long. And that was absolutely horrible. Feed Me Morons heel Aldo Montoya. That is the correct answer. Great job. But and it was a Hell in a Cell, five-man Hell in a Cell, and it was a five-minute match, and that was really kind of the turning point. I mean, making it a pay-per-view itself was kind of the turning point for Hell in a Cell because it's diluted it more and more and more. But having a dark match Hell in a Cell that lasted 5 minutes long, that just goes to show that the Satan structure and all of that, all of the accolades that you give to Hell in a Cell, isn't as strong as it used to be because the element of mystique, and I've said this on many shows, the element of mystique has been lost so much in the WWE. The larger-than-life kayfabe definition of a babyface and a heel, surprising returns, protecting characters like The Undertaker. He had mystique for a long portion of his life, of his tenure in the WWE, and that started to fade away. Kane is definitely a person who his mystique has been gone probably since about 2002. But it's like those elements really made pro wrestling thrive back in the day. And I believe they can come back with the internet wrestling community and with the smart fans and with the dirt sheets. It's kind of hard to bring that back fully, but I still think it can come. But back in the day, you had the Bunkhouse Stampedes, you had the Scaffold matches, you had the Halloween Havoc Chamber of Doom match. Ooh. And all of those matches, in hindsight, were so ridiculous. But back then, people were so overwhelmed because they marketed it so amazing. The Coal Miner's Glove match between Jake Roberts and Sting. Even the Spindle will make the deal. We'll have a Flavor of the Week discussion about that soon, about the whole spin the wheel, make the deal, all the gimmick matches that Halloween Havoc presented back in the day, and WCW was absolutely amazing. Special shout out to Destroyer. Eric Veras confirmed Dolph Ziggler versus Cesaro in the 2 out of 3 falls match for the WWE Intercontinental Championship Hell in a Cell exclusive from WWE, and of course reported on WeAreWrestling.net. And like I was saying, as far as the matches back in the day, it had such a mystique to them. And when Hell in a Cell originated back in 2002, it was a very good concept. I'm sorry, Hell in a Cell originated back in 97. It was a very, very good concept. I loved it. But it was very mystique. They booked it so amazing. Nowadays, diluted. Having its own pay-per-view, having two Hell in a Cell matches that are singles matches, and oh my goodness. And Elimination Chambers like that too. When it originated back in 2002, awesome concepts, absolutely awesome concepts. But now it's a standalone pay-per-view that has to happen at the same time every year. That loses the mystique. So you know that it's going to lead up to the Hell in a Cell match or the Elimination Chamber match. It doesn't bring that type of grittiness like you two have been battling for so long, and it has to come to an end. So I'm going to book you two. I'm going to book you in a Hell in a Cell match. You know, the old Vince McMahon. Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, you've been feuding for way too long. And so there's 4 words that I can think of that will end this feud. Hell in a Cell. You know, something like that. That brings the mystique. You got the awls and the oohs of the crowd. But unfortunately, that didn't happen anymore because you have Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, so you know what's going to happen. So it's absolutely ridiculous. comment here on WeAreWrestling.net. Completely agree. The gimmick pay-per-views ruin credibility. The only thing I disagree with is the chamber, because the chamber is like the Rumble. It still at least somewhat works. And I agree with that. I love the Rumble. I love the Royal Rumble because that's – I love pay-per-views that has unpredictability. And that's why I like Money in the Bank. That's why Money in the Bank is one of my favorite pay-per-views, because it has some, it still has some type of unpredictability of who's going to win the case. Although the case itself has been diluted, but just some type of element of predictability, especially with the 40-man concept coming back for the second time. Of course, there's only a handful every year of people who are going to be at the Rumble that really has a chance of winning, but it still brings a level of unpredictability of who's coming back, who's going to surprise us. Like many people know, my favorite wrestler in the WWE is Chris Jericho, and Jericho coming back a couple years ago, you know, he's one of the only people who does a really good job hiding his comebacks. And, of course, people marked out when he was the second person in the Rumble and lasted over 45 minutes, and it was a really good comeback. Well, that part alone was a really good comeback. And so we need that mystique again. We need that type of thing. With the chamber, you know, I agree that there's still some unpredictability there, but still it should be kind of like a – These six people are vying for the World Heavyweight Champion, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. These six people are going at it. I mean, the Elimination Chamber structure would have been absolutely perfect for what we see right now. You have five people, and you can throw in someone else, maybe a Triple H or so. But you have, especially with Rollins, what Rollins did with Orton, this past episode of Raw, those five people, and of course you could have thrown somebody else in there, that would have been a perfect type of angle for the Elimination Chamber. Perfect. Because you have Randy Orton, you have Seth Rollins, John Cena, Dean Ambrose, Kane, and someone else you could have thrown in there, maybe a Rusev. These six people want to vie for the number one contendership but instead you have a end of feud match between Rollins and Ambrose, and you have another match between Orton and Cena, which we've seen many of those this year and last year in the past 12 years.
Yeah, you've seen a lot. It takes away from the mystique. You know, I almost remember dating back to the casket matches where a bit of mystique,
yep.
Kind of a spooky thing going. Even the Buried Alive. But Hell in a Cell, yeah, in recent years, that's been the captivating one. However, yeah, it's watered down, just like anything WWE does. Elimination Chamber, I never really thought that as anything that important. I mean, to me, Hell in a Cell trumps everything. Like I said, Elimination Chamber just became an event. Kind of like what Hell in a Cell is. Oh, it's an event. Elimination Chamber. Yep, these many guys are going to get in there and go at it and yada yada. But Hell in a Cell still has that impact of, yeah, this could be something. These guys are going to go at it. The two Hell in a Cell matches, that's not so bad. I mean, what else are they going to do with it? That's the thing. They've already made it weak. They made it a brand. They made Hell in a Cell a brand instead of this is a once in a chance. These guys are, what else are we going to do with them unless we throw chainsaws? That's the only thing that's going to top it. So. That's good and it's great. And, yeah, it lost some mystique because back then you had the Mankinds and the Undertakers and people that really, they were Hell in a Cell. That's it. I mean, the Undertaker's Hell in a Cell. Mankind's Hell in a Cell. Triple H, he's been in most of them or won most of them. But to me, he's still not a Hell in a Cell type of guy. But, you know. You got to have that edge. You just can't throw anybody in there and say, oh, it's Rey Mysterio and Big Show and Hell in a Cell. Because, again, there's no reason they should be in there. There's no same thing with the contenders that are in there this coming weekend. There's no reason for them to be in there. And again, Orton and Cena, I've seen that a million times, don't really care about that match. Ambrose and Rollins, yeah, but it doesn't really call for the Hell in a Cell yet.
Yep, good stuff there. Next trivia question we have is Taz, Steve Austin, William Regal, Chuck Palumbo. Which of those four was not a member of the Alliance? Again, Taz, Steve Austin, William Regal, Chuck Palumbo. Which of those four names, there's only one of them, which one of those four was not a member of the Alliance? We get Triple H on Raw with the name ring promo underneath Hell in a Cell with Orton, Kane, and Rollins. Seth Rollins speaks, and then Orton takes over and speaks. Then Triple H tells Orton that match versus Cena will be the number one contenders match. I'm actually cool with this. I'm okay with the fact that there is an added stipulation to Cena versus Orton. And here, real quick, here's WWE logic here. We'll have a match between Dean Ambrose and John Cena. The winner will get the contract, but they won't be on the main event because Cena and Orton is going to be the main event. I'm okay with the fact that it's a number one contenders match, but it just seems so thrown together. They needed something to do with Orton, and they needed to do something with Cena to carry him over with Lesnar, because him and Lesnar scheduled to go against each other again at the Royal Rumble, which is 3 months from now, which is really crazy. How in the world are they going to make that happen with the Rumble? But, I really think that Orton... I think Orton should really take a back seat, to be honest with you. He's never been the guy. Orton has paid his dues in the past dozen years. Don't get me wrong with that. I'll give Orton his respect as far as, nearly a dozen reigns as champion, and I'm okay with that as far as just the dues that he's paid. But at this point, it's time to pass the torch. I really think that Randy Orton should be feuding with an up-and-comer. His feud with Reigns, a lot of people didn't like it, but I think Randy Orton, he's a solid wrestler, and he brought the best out of Reigns. I think it really helped Reigns become more of a wrestler and really get to hone his craft. I really wish people would give Reigns a chance. The guy's only been around for, Survivor Series 2012, so it's only been 2 years, and so The Rock, this first couple years, his first year or so was not good at all. I mean, his heel turn in the Nation and really got a chance to develop his ring work, his mic work as a heel was not good in the beginning. People need to know your role and shut your mouth. It was very robotic. It was a very, very robotic mic work. When he got that confidence, he began to have a lot better mic work and was confident in the ring. But it took time. It really took time. His first WWE Championship run, I believe, was Deadly Games Survivor Series of 98. And he was only there for a couple years at the time. I believe he debuted at Survivor Series of 96. So he was only there 2 years at the time. And even then, he wasn't – I mean, he was really the guy, so to speak. But it was still – he was still not ready. It was really still giving him time to develop his craft. And at this point, I really see Roman Reigns, as being the guy, and people should give him a chance. I mean, they really should give him a chance and give him the opportunity to develop his character, have some time, be patient with the guy. And so I totally believe that. But Randy Orton should be in a position where he should develop new talent. I really think that Orton has that ability in the ring, and it's that perfect time to do that. You have the only really big talent they're developing right now, as far as baby faces are concerned, that's still wrestling right now. The only relatively new guy is Dean Ambrose, and you wrestled with Dean Ambrose when he was John Moxley. He's been around for quite some time. He's been around as long as, you know, the main eventers have, but he's still a relatively, quote-unquote, new guy to the WWE. They need new talent. They need. I would love to see an Adrian Neville versus Randy Orton feud, a Sami Zayn versus Randy Orton feud, Baron Corbin. I'm really high on that guy from NXT. I really like Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin and Randy Orton, wow. Baron Corbin versus Kane, or Sami Zayn and Orton would be, I think that could be a show stealer to me. But Orton needs to build talent. You know, you have the people like the Jerichos and the Canes that, and the RVDs that, are there to put people over. I think it's about time for Orton to do the same. I don't see any more big main event runs from Orton. He should develop new talent and put him over. That should be his sole role in the WWE.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Randy Orton started young. He was considered almost a main event guy within the first couple of years. He got in the back door through his daddy. So, but again, you got the Jerichos and the RVDs. He started from scratch. You know, my dad's, you know, the postmaster somewhere in Podunk, Canada or whatever. And so, but, I mean, they really honed their skills. And so did Orton. But the thing is, Orton's still young. I mean, he's like 33, 34, which, again, it's kind of old. But for him to start jobbing, and I don't see that happening anytime, maybe within 3 years or so. But I agree that he should be. I just don't see the WWE doing that with him. They're going to keep him as much as they can because he's one of the few that they can really hold on to help him, sadly enough. However, yeah, he needs to start putting people over. A lot of people seem to think he's going to be doing a heel turn soon. I've been hearing rumblings in the back rooms and back offices. He's doing a face turn. And have you seen the vines that he's produced? Those things are hilarious.
Yeah. Hashtag RK out of nowhere. That is pretty funny, actually.
That's great. And one thing I do want to mention tonight is Ox Baker recently passed away.
Yes.
That's very sad. I remember him from early tapes that I was talking about, and just looked at wrestling almanacs and things like that, and that's a big loss.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. So, you know, our prayers go out to the family of Ox Baker. He was 80 years old, and he lived a life as a professional wrestler, and his very interesting face, very interesting villainous character. He had one of the craziest handlebar mustaches that I've ever seen in my life. He was a very, very, talk about your larger than life style character. Talk about your faces and your heels. He was a really, really good, good person as far as, being a good heel for people to feud with. He has some really good feuds with he has some really good feuds with some big names back in the late 60s, early 70s. So, and the correct answer to the trivia question, I love the fact that they've been going at it. The correct answer is William Regal, but there's an asterisk behind it. He was partially Alliance Commissioner by Shane McMahon, but he wasn't a member of the Alliance stable as far as wrestlers are concerned. So Yeah, I know that. I know that people are going to get on me with that, but there's the asterisk to the question. He was not a member of the competing team. The next question is, who was known as the ninth wonder of the world? Who was known as the ninth wonder of the world? People are wondering who are talking. Myself and my co-host Derek. He's a former professional wrestler, and he wrestled with Dean Ambrose and when he was John Moxley back in the Indies. So that's Derek, the Pancakes and Power Slams co-host. So
when can I answer the question?
You can't answer the question because you've already been beaten. The correct answer is actually, as a matter of fact, we already have the correct answer. But what's your answer?
Well, I was going to say The Rock, Don Morocco. No, I'm just teasing. Yeah, it's China, of course.
Of course, it was China. Who was the eighth wonder of the world? I think that's an even easier question.
Nice.
Andre the Giant. Yes, Andre the Giant as the eighth wonder of the world, and then China as the ninth wonder of the world. What a big jump in the wrong direction as far as wonders of the world. So very, very interesting, though. But it was funny. China actually had a pretty good run. I despise when they made her Intercontinental Champion. Oh, I absolutely despise that. But she actually had a big, you know, physical overhaul as far as looks wise. And when she changed her, you know, "Don't Treat Me Like a Woman," you know, song, she actually looked better. She was better in the ring. When she had the feud against Ivory. Setting up for WrestleMania 17, I believe it was, where she beats Ivory for the Women's Championship. And that was actually a really good time for her. But the Intercontinental title crap was just, that was absolutely ridiculous. I couldn't stand it. Next on Raw, we have Damian Mizdow and Golden Stardust defeating Sheamus and Usos. I actually have an article written on the Bleacher Report that I'm going to publish tomorrow. It's been written for the past couple of days, but I'm gonna make it live tomorrow. And it's really, I really wanted to see for a second if I wanted to publish it, but I'm gonna go ahead and launch it. I'm gonna go ahead and finalize it. I wanted to wait if I was going to publish it, but I am going to publish it tomorrow. And it's about Mizdow. It's about booking Mizdow from now to WrestleMania 31. Pretty good, interesting booking that I have planned for Mizdow, and I think that it'll work. I definitely think that it'll work, and it's going to be an interesting. It's going to be. I really hope it goes this way too. I really do, because it not only does it gives the opportunity for WWE to capitalize on the landmine they've struck, but it gives Damian Mizdow an opportunity to kind of brand his own self. The guy is over. We talk about Mizdow just about every week now. The guy is the saving grace of The Miz, because a lot of people, most people don't like The Miz. He's just irrelevant. But Damian Sandow is what keeps The Miz ticking as far as relevance is concerned. And every week, just the mannerisms that he has is absolutely hilarious. And the very fact that they actually had him get the win and people just went berserk as far as... In a good way, they liked it. Mizdow is one of the hottest commodities in the WWE right now. Period.
Well, of course he is. I mean, he's doing it. It's great for The Miz, but it's great for Mizdow. He's bringing attention to himself. I mean, we were talking last week. He was the lowest common denominator in the WWE weeks ago. But now, I mean, he comes out on Raw. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited. Everybody is. I mean, that's just such – I don't know if I can remember such a rapid turnaround for somebody who was almost next to nothing, who was nothing, to just absolutely being almost – I wouldn't want to say a show stealer, but, I mean, people get pretty excited when he comes out. And an old-school wrestling fan like myself, he thinks a lot of the stuff nowadays is subpar. I'm looking forward to seeing him coming out. What's he going to do? Why is this going to be funny? When are things going to get kind of tough between Miz Dow and the Miz? So he's doing a great job. Keep it going. I honestly can't think of another time when something like this just so rapidly changed overnight. I mean, with Stone Cold and whatever. Stone Cold still, he wasn't at the lowest common denominator the way Miz Dow was. So
yeah, and it wasn't really, and I agree, it was an overnight thing for Austin after the Austin 316 promo. But you're right. He was still, on an upswing. It wasn't, he didn't reach the lowest of lows. I mean, the Ringmaster wasn't anything to be proud about by the slightest, because when he was the Ringmaster, his biggest feud was Savio Vega. But now, he never had that lowest of lows moment. He was still, involved with the Royal Rumble as far as winning it. He was still involved with the King of the Ring, and he wasn't at the lowest of lows, like you said. And I really think that with Sandow, he really didn't have any choice to go but up, and absolutely. And but nowadays, he's really using what he has, and it's one of the best segments to watch on Raw. Absolutely, period. Speaking of best segments to watch on Raw, one of the worst segments to watch on Raw, AJ Fox defeats Alicia Fox defeats AJ Lee. Got a real quick comment. It says the Evasion Era was the most disappointing storylines in wrestling history. That is a flavor of the week topic in and of itself. I'm gonna give you the short version. We've talked about the Evasion Era before on the show. Ryan, another one of the other Pancakes of Power Slams co-hosts, Ryan Fuqua, he and I, we talked about the Invasion Era recently, a few days ago actually, and I loved the Invasion Era. I loved the potential of the Invasion Era, but oh man, talk about over-anticipated and under-delivered, man. We'll go into more detail about it in upcoming shows, I'd imagine. But it was tough. It was tough to see what we saw from the Invasion Era. So really tough to experience. But what's even tougher to experience is a match between Alicia Fox and AJ Lee. Alicia Fox is Paige's BFF now, and Alicia Fox has gotten consecutive wins over AJ Lee. So I'm wondering if this is going to cause some type of friction between Alicia Fox and Paige. The bottom line is both of them were reported to be newest cast members of Total Divas coming up in the new season in January. And so, based on this rule that Vince McMahon has that no one on the Total Divas cast can be Divas champion, who does that leave now as far as who's not on the cast? And you have AJ Lee, you have Layla, and That's really about it. I mean, who else is on other than? I mean, of course, you have a lot of people from NXT that are really good that may get called up. Charlotte, Bayley, Sasha Banks, Becky. Someone from Twitter or the live stream. What is her name? Becky, I can't remember her last name from NXT. I don't remember her name. I think it started with an L, but Lynch. Yeah, thank you very much. Kudos to John Chris. Oh, and her name started with an L. Becky Lynch. Yeah, she's good too. And there's a lot of people that are good from NXT, but as far as people you have on the WWE roster now that aren't involved in Total Divas, you have really AJ Lee, and that's gonna be a big problem for future booking for the Divas Championship if AJ Lee and Layla are really the only two people that aren't involved in the show.
Yeah, they're not involved in the show. Nor should they be. I mean, it's not that great of a show. Maybe I don't think they should have the Divas title be intertwined with the Divas show. Just for the fact that just because me, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see WWE go that commercial to be in a reality show just to help promote their belt that they can't promote themselves, so they have to rely on another cable network. That seems very un-Vince McMahon-ish, and it just seems.
But who's left though? How would you book the Divas Championship for the next 6 months if only two people are involved? And who wants to see Layla as the Divas champion again?
Nobody. They've got nothing. That's what they fell flat on this. They absolutely fell flat. But again, they have to pump the Divas division just from a reality show, but they've got nobody to be an awesome, solid contender. Paige was there. AJ Lee was there. But they just let him be prissy girl. Now, that's it. They're not competitors. They're not athletes. They are athletes. They can do, but they don't sell them that way, and it just makes a horrible 5-10 minutes on Raw that, again, Monday Night Football is looking pretty good when that stuff comes on.
Yes, yeah, special shout out to Peyton Manning on Sunday Night Football, but special shout out to Peyton Manning breaking records and taking names. But yeah, you're right. The Texans and the I'm reached a brain fart here. Who did Houston play?
Who did they play? I watched it. I can't remember. Who did they play?
Yeah.
San Francisco.
San Fran. Yep. They played San Francisco. Yeah.
And
yeah, we. I just remember the Texans beating them up. So, yeah, but you're right. I mean, I there's no point. I think the Divas should really stay on NXT, and it gets to the point where if NXT is just really outdoing Raw in many cases, but especially the Divas. I mean, it's not even a Divas Championship in NXT. It's still called the Women's Championship, and. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Bayley. I think she's super cool. Bayley's gonna hug you. I think the Full Sail crowd is really creating her to be an amazing character. It's really great. And of course, Charlotte. You know, the pedigree speaks for itself. Big fan of that. Sasha Banks. She's only 22 years old. She's got a ton of life left as far as her pro wrestling tenure is concerned. She's really made some marks in a few years. She's been with NXT, and only be 22 years old. I mean, that's saying a lot. Starting that, Paige is the same way. Paige is only 21, so It's same thing. I like the fact, you know, that they are having the women's wrestlers start young now, as far as really develop their characters. I think it is time to pass the torch, seeing how Layla's 37 now, 38, you know, and the AJ Lee's hitting 30, and you know, Lisa's Fox, you know, same around the same age. So, yeah, 22. thank you very much. She's 22, and so, you know, she's 22. Sasha Banks 22. So I definitely think that's creating a new breed of women's wrestlers is really good. So hopefully we'll see the same type of competition on live TV as we do with NXT. If somehow we see that type of competition on live TV, I'd be totally fine with the Divas division if we get that. Hopefully we do get that. So that's my hope. Next question is, what was the team name of Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant? What was the team name of Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant? Next, we have a Randy Orton in-ring promo, interrupted by John Cena. The two have a war of words. And then Paul Heyman appears, cuts promo about Cena and Orton in favor of his client, Brock Lesnar. And then somehow Cena hoists him up for an AA and puts him down. Doesn't make any sense at all to me. He's like trying too much not to be a heel. You're going to get booed either way. And the funny thing is, I think if he actually turned heel, he would probably get more cheers than he does now. But it's like the very fact that you're trying not to be a heel is making you even more a heel. So it's counterproductive. And putting him up for an AA just to put him down, it was just crazy. But I suppose it set up, it was the spot that he needed to do for all of us Smark fans. It was the spot that he needed to do to set up for the Randy Orton RKO, and then he RKOs Heyman. I think adding Heyman to this segment was good, because it kind of ties in the Brock Lesnar piece into the match between Cena and Orton, which I think that they need to do whatever they can to really make the match relevant, because we've seen it so many times. So it puts some type of relevancy. I'm tired of Orton-Cena matches, but I think that they did a decent job with kind of finally weaving in Brock Lesnar within those two to make the match a little bit more meaningful.
Yeah, it's meaningful. It's good to see Paul Heyman back, just for the fact that, you know, you don't want to forget about Brock Lesnar. He's still there. Let's not forget. You know, we got the hype going into Hell in a Cell. I don't want to say that much hype, because, again, I don't see too much promise for this pay-per-view, but it was kind of refreshing to see him come out, you know. My client, Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar.
So, I mean, good job. And kudos to that. Again, that was another high point for Raw. There wasn't that many high points last night, but that one definitely turns on a little bit, made you kind of open your eyes and, hey, something's going on. But they got to put that in there. Good job. And Randy Orton, John Cena going back and forth with, you know, Heyman breaking it up. It was, a lot of it was filler. But, you know, they're doing the best they can, I guess, with what they have to really sell this pay-per-view. You know?
Yeah. Let's see. Shout-out to Clyde on WeAreWrestling.net stream. The Mega Bucks is the correct answer. Mega Bucks, Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant. Interesting tag team going against the Mega Powers of... Who was the Mega Powers, Derek?
Oh, the Mega Powers were Macho Man, Randy Savage, and was it Haku? Or was it Hulk Hogan? I can't remember.
Of course. Hulk Hogan. Haku was, interesting transition to the interesting correlation to the Mega Bucks. Haku teamed with who, and what were their what was their names other than the other than teaming with the Barbarian?
You're asking me. He was with the Colossal Connection. Bobby the Brain Heenan was their manager, and they split up at WrestleMania 6.
And who was the other member of the Colossal Connection?
Andre the Giant.
Andre the Giant, absolutely. Interesting team. Interesting team and team name. It worked, though. I mean, they were kind of like a makeshift tag team. They were just two of Heenan's boys, but it worked. The Colossal Connection and their feuds against Demolition, I think it definitely worked out very well for them as a tag team. They won the tag team titles as Colossal Connection. So, yeah, special shout-out to that team that doesn't get as much love as I think that they should. It was a very interesting team. And next we have Rusev defeating Big E. My goodness, I'm so tired of – oh, my goodness. I'm so tired of Big E just getting totally just he's getting buried. I mean, talk about buried. People use that term loosely a lot of times, but talk about buried. This guy gets absolutely buried. I remember when he won the Intercontinental Championship about a year ago, when Curtis Axel was Intercontinental Champion at the time, and he beat Curtis Axel. People marked out because he just recently turned face at the time. He was really wallowing in the mid-card heel role when he was feuding against Alberto Del Rio while Dolph Ziggler was out. And it was time for, and then he helped CM Punk, and he transitioned into a babyface. And people were behind Big E because he was one of the biggest and most popular people and NXT history when he, you know, the three ain't enough, man, I need five, came from NXT when he would just keep chanting five, five, five. Crowd went bananas, and he was way over. He was NXT champion. And he came in as a heel. You know, he has the look, he has the physique, he has the appearance to him as some monster heel. I get it. When he was, he attacked John Cena a couple of years ago, I think it was December of 2012, and when he was, you know, the bodyguard of Dolph Ziggler, it worked. It was a good transition, calling him up from NXT in that sense. But when they made him face, I think it really could have worked. And when they, I think that he's like a black version of Kurt Angle. He has a really good wrestling capabilities to him. And the reason why I say he's the black version of Kurt Angle is because he's big, but he's shorter, and he's really good on the suplexes. He's really good. And again, the reason why I say the black version of Kurt Angle is because I think that they could have used him in that capacity when he was pro USA against Rusev. And don't worry, he is from the USA. He was born in Florida, so I really think that they could have used him. I think Jack Swagger was the best option, of course, as far as the pro patriotic babyface. But I think that they could have used Big E in a kind of upper mid card babyface role, wearing the red, white, and blue, because you're going to get those type of pops anyways. You're going to get the patriotic pops. Anybody from the States, they're going to, you know, you're going to get those type of pops if you're from the States, period. And I think they could have done it. I think it would have worked. But the sad part of it is they just destroyed his character. They tried to put him with Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. That went absolutely nowhere, and it's really sad to see where Big E is. As Big E's became these days, so embarrassing and just such a waste of television time that they've made him now.
Hey, it's a waste of television time. If we rewind maybe 20 episodes, maybe not even that much. I mean, we were praising Biggie Lane. I mean, he was at the top of his game, and they just buried him. I mean, he could still go. I mean, I can say he can still go like he's 50 or something. No, I mean, he's a legitimate, he is above mid-card status. And he disappeared for a while, and he comes back, and, I mean, he could legitimately be a great run with Rusev, but it's not going to be that way. They still choose the Big Show. But the Big Show's been kind of past his prime for a while. I mean, not too long ago, he was in the ring crying and begging for his job and begging for mercy and begging for something to eat or whatever it was, and now he comes back, and we're supposed to believe that he's this big. I know wrestling fans are forgettable. They forget things that might have happened to their favorite characters, but I don't. So, who can you put? You know, Kurt Angle, he's a free agent. Have him come in. I mean, what would be bigger for Rusev and for the WWE? It's true. Oh, it's true. Comes back and takes it by storm. I think that would be the best thing for Rusev, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But we'll see.
I think that Angle's going to stay around with TNA because he's just not willing to work a full-time schedule with the WWE's offering. But I think that if they brought Angle in to go against Rusev, I think that would be such the perfect setup because Rusev going through, and a lot of people may disagree with me on this, but I'm going to say it anyways. I think that people who lose can actually get a rub. And you don't have to put someone over for them to be relevant. The Undertaker is the perfect example. The streak meant something. The streak meant something. Here's the thing. You have people like, Jason Albert's. When he was A-Train and Albert, I think now, you know, he was Intercontinental Champion for a hiccup, but I would say that probably Albert's best thing on his resume was him being a member of the Undertaker's streak, and that's the very interesting part about. about the streak. You don't have to put people over to make them famous, as The Undertaker would say. And I really think that I really think that someone like a Rusev would benefit so much about he would benefit so much by being losing to Kurt Angle. I don't think that it would hurt his character one bit. I think that you would have a really, really good setup. Now, granted, you know, someone like Cena beating Bray Wyatt, that was a bit different because a lot of people say Cena buries people anyways, and that from the very beginning was just a bad gimmick. I mean that was just a bad angle. Cena versus Bray Wyatt just didn't make any sense from the very beginning. But there's many cases where people, like for instance, when Randy Orton was facing Cesaro, Cesaro beat Orton one time or two. Well, he beat him once, I believe, on an episode of SmackDown. But even when Orton was beating, when Orton beat Cesaro, the other couple times that he beat Cesaro, that helped Cesaro because it was a moment when John Cena beat Seth Rollins on SmackDown. It really helped Seth Rollins when Seth Rollins was still with the Shield. It helped Seth Rollins because it was kind of an underdog type of thing. People were getting behind Seth Rollins, and it really helped him. So you don't always have to lose to someone to really get over with someone. And I think with Rusev, he can run through people until WrestleMania, and Angle could have came back, could have had the retribution of winning for the USA, and then Rusev could have went his very way and kept beating people up. You don't have to win.
You don't always have to win, and you shouldn't have to win, because it's really people get behind you, and they get behind the character. I mean,
right.
If your character's that great, people are going to watch you, whether, I don't say whether you win or lose. If you lose the occasional one to a name that's bigger than you, that just adds more fuel to the fire, and it doesn't make you yesterday's news. At least it shouldn't. I mean, if you're that legitimate of a character and you really believe in your character, and the people can get behind that, because that's what makes it. I mean, that's what made for Stone Cold Steve Austin. Or else he'd spend 4 or 5 more years as the ringmaster and be done with it. I mean, same thing with The Rock. You have to make something of it.
That was a perfect point, because Austin really got his big rub at the WrestleMania against Bret Hart when Ken Shamrock was the referee, and he lost. So that was he passed out. He showed his ability. He showed his strength by he lost the match, but he passed out, and that was really the pivotal point in his character. So the perfect example right there.
Perfect example, but again, you also have to have the booking behind it. I mean, it's the company has to believe in you, and a perfect example of that is Daniel Bryan. I mean, they made an angle to, oh, we're stopping him, but that just made people want him to go forward and forward and forward just because they believed in the Daniel Bryan spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to have that, and right now it's kind of missing to a degree. But, yeah, it depends on the character, what you put behind it, but also you got to have the top brass behind it as well. But the fans, more than anything, have the say-so.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we get some type of a lot of people reported it to be a I don't know if the purse, if the soldier was fake, but a lot of people reported that the gear that he was wearing was not authentic military gear. So he was, you know, I suppose that he was a character. But somehow they felt as if it would have been a good idea to bring some type of guy in here when the American flag comes down and Rusev's about to pull it off. And some guy comes in and they have to fake it that, you know, the security's going to attack him because he's, you know, a guy from the arena. I think that whole segment was absolutely ridiculous. And then the Big Show cutting kind of a sappy promo, and it just didn't go. It just didn't work for me at all.
It was kind of poor taste, just for the fact that, you know, that's not something that you kind of mess or joke around with. I can see what they were trying to do to make Rusev look like this absolute vile, hated, almost like Sergeant Slaughter in the Iron Sheik. So I can see they're drawing for desperate measures right now. That was kind of a bad turn. I don't know. Maybe this guy's going to have a match with Rusev. Maybe he's an up-and-comer from, you know, OVW. I mean, anything's possible. I mean, they don't put people in there, just random people, to run in against a superstar. But I can see why they did it and what they thought they could gain from it. But from a viewer's perspective, kind of low blow. And especially with Big Show crying. And what's up with him crying? But
yeah.
I get it. It wasn't the best thing in the world, but it was what it was.
Yeah. Next, we have Brie Bella defeating Summer Rae. Like I said before, I mean, somehow they're deciding to make this match at Hell in a Cell, and the stipulation is the loser has to be the other person's personal assistant. I totally just don't. I'm not interested at this whatsoever, and it's really sad to me that the WWE had something going so well with this when Nikki made the turn at SummerSlam. It really could have been something, and now it's just a total catastrophe to me.
It's been a catastrophe. The one thing that Summer Rae, when I see Summer Rae, it just reminds me how much the WWE needs Fandango. They need that extra spice.
He hasn't even been on TV since around that time. They don't need Fandango.
they need Fandango. Because Summer Raw sucks since SummerSlam, so come on.
I think you got a good point there, actually.
Of course I do. And that's what the Divas Division, again, it's absolute nonsense. So.
Yeah, sadly. Dean Ambrose cuts an in-ring promo. He pulls out a Seth Rollins dummy. I think that kind of busted. It was a bit weird. It was, you know, I chuckled a couple times, but I mean, segments like that, you know, you need to make them very timely, and I think it went too far. The pile driver on the dummy was funny, but other than that, I just don't like it at all.
Yeah, it went a little too long. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, it was great. Maybe shave a couple minutes off of it. Still keep it kind of fresh, but when you're just kind of standing around and like, hey, I got this dummy, what do I do with it now? Oh, let's pretend to pick its nose and whatever. Yeah, they just waited too long. I mean, what else were you going to do? What if you were standing there in the ring with that dummy? I mean, that's what WWE's come to nowadays. So they've got too much time on their hands and don't know what to do with it. So, yeah, it was what it was. Monday Night Raw, ladies and gentlemen. 347-884-8452.
Indeed. It's the number to call live, time permitting. Next we have Cesaro defeating Dolph Ziggler. And I've said this before, and there's a good conversation here on RealWrestling.net about what burial means. We don't have time about it. We don't have time for it this week, but feel free next week, someone in the chat room, bring that back up. Remind me about talking about burial, because we don't have enough time now, but remind me about bringing up the word burial. I'm liking what I'm seeing in the conversation that's going on about burial. I like it, just remind me about that again, because that word is overutilized for sure. But next we have, like you were saying, as far as Cesaro and Ziggler, I just cannot stand how they are allowing. I think it's one of those things now, and I said this before, we're going back to the curse. We're going back to the Intercontinental title curse. You hold the title, you win a couple of matches, and then you lose a string of matches. It's absolutely ridiculous to me. I cannot stand how they decide to set someone up to become a number one contender by beating the champion in a non-title match. I think that is ridiculous. I think that is lazy, lazy booking. Whatever happened to the number one contenders matches for the mid-card championships? I absolutely loved earlier this year or late last year that they did a number one contenders tournament for the Intercontinental Championship. I loved that because that is the type of stuff that brings prestige back to the mid-card championship. You don't just have the mid-card champion lose a string of matches and expect just because he wins the match at the pay-per-view that he's gaining prestige and it makes him look better. No. If you lose four matches before you win one, that doesn't make you a better Intercontinental champion. That just makes the booking even more horrible and lazy. I just despise what they're doing with the mid-card right now, with the Intercontinental Championship specifically.
Intercontinental Championship used to be something you'd hold on to, and we've talked about this probably since the start of Pancakes and Power Slam for the 658th episode that we've had. But it's something you can't compare it to. It's nothing to have. I mean, it's a ghost title from what I'd say. You've got the Intercontinental Championship. Good job. You'll probably lose it in a few weeks. And while you have it, it means nothing. I mean, point taken, enough said. I mean, it's absolutely a disgrace to have it. Dolph Ziggler deserves to have the title by all means. But they don't let and flourish. I mean, he's got some of the best matches. I mean, the guy can go. He's got the highest energy I've seen in anybody for a long, long time. But he gets beat. It's ridiculous booking, what he just said. It's absolutely the booking as the total epitome of what the Intercontinental Championship is not.
Yeah. We'll take a brief pause. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Main event of Raw was Orton, Rollins, and Kane defeating Cena and Ambrose. Ambrose taking the fall. He had to lose to Orton, but I knew the sale was going to come down. I knew that was going to happen. I wish they would have made this a six man match at Hell in a Cell. Since you don't have Brock Lesnar, I wish they would have made either this a number one contenders match with six man, kind of like a six man Hell in a Cell. Or they could have done a five-man Hell in a Cell for the number one contender. Or they could have done a six-man match, like kind of like they did with the handicap match. I think it was fun to see it in a cell. I kind of didn't want it to go down just because I'm a big fan of keeping the prestige of things and keeping the mystique. But it was good to see. I knew that Seth Rollins was going to be a spot monkey like he always is. And it was good to see that for just a minute. I wish they would have made it a six-man match because here's the thing. The next pay-per-view is Survivor Series. And so this match is really going to end the feud of Ambrose and Rollins. I don't see no purpose of it continuing. They could have had a six-man match. They could have transitioned it or even a number one contenders match with those five people. Either way would have been fine. And then next month you could have had Team Ambrose against Team Rollins, so you could have continued the match, and then at TLC you could have ended. You could have had like a ladder match for the case. So a ladder match for the case between Ambrose and Rollins would have been a much better ending than this Hell in a Cell. I think you could have extended it out by not having Ambrose and Rollins be necessarily so focused on each other. I think they could have still feuded with each other, but kind of intermingled a feud to kind of carry it over. And having the five people that we saw on the Raw main event as a number one contenders match, and then having Team Ambrose versus Team Rollins at Survivor Series for November, and then for December having a ladder match between Ambrose and Rollins for the case. That would have been a perfect way to book the feud for the rest of the year. And then the feuds of course would have reset, you know, come Royal Rumble. That would have really reset. Something different could have happened, you know, and set up just brand new feuds. I think that would have been a better way than just to see what we were having then. But it was an interesting match. And I definitely think that it would have it could have had a better outcome.
A better outcome, but again, it just kind of goes to show what kind of pay-per-view Hell in a Cell is going to be. I mean, the talent has the ability to make a great show, but the booking has to be there as well. And they've got all the talent in the world. What I've been saying, it's the booking. That's what you've been saying. The booking just absolutely is subpar. I mean, anybody in their mind can think of something better, but again, I don't have billions of dollars at stake, and I'm not in the wrestling politics as far as, you know, who's to do what and say what. But again, it just builds up the pay-per-view that we're going to have, and Monday Night Raw was better than last week, but it doesn't really make me want to buy this pay-per-view, which I won't, but I'll be able to tell you all about it next week.
For $9.99. All right, time for the flavor of the week. Flavor of the week is coming up, and we're going to talk about Hell in a Cell matches, and then we're going to go to the predictions. We'll be back right after this.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
Flavor of the Week this week is two of my favorite Hell in a Cell matches. For the past month, we've been talking about Hell in a Cell matches, and we've had some really good ones that we've talked about. But real quick, for the remaining 10 minutes of the show, we're going to talk about that and then and the predictions of Hell in a Cell. This week, we're going to talk about first the Armageddon Hell in a Cell match. Talk about competitors that are vying for the world title. It was Kurt Angle. He was the world champ at that time. And there were a bunch of contenders that were vying for the championship. The Undertaker, Steve Austin, The Rock, Triple H, and Rikishi. And those six people were the – Rikishi was inserted there because he had a main event push for a few months when he did it for The Rock. So he was inserted there, and that was really the highest point of his career when he was in the main event picture in 2000. But I was okay with Rikishi being there. I don't know. I guess I have a soft spot for Rikishi because I have a soft spot for people who have many, many characters – and they finally find one that works, and so I think I have a soft spot for people like that. I think Rikishi was the one out of many characters that work. When he was with the Head Shrinkers, it worked too, but he wasn't a singles competitor. But he did have the when he was the Sultan and the Make a Difference Rikishi and Rikishi Fatu. Those were all a bust of characters. But Rikishi worked when he was with Too Cool. And him as a main event, when he was a bad man, making bad man, whatever, the Batman, doing bad man, bad looks, Prince Among Thieves and Crooks, whatever the words for it was. I think that was his best moments in the WWE. That was his best string of months in the WWE. And I definitely believe that it was one of the best Hell in a Cells because it was six man in Armageddon 2000, and it definitely was one and only because we never had a six-man Hell in a Cell. That was nearly 14 years ago, and we've never seen a Hell in a Cell like that since. It was a really good, just people just fighting each other all around, you know, up and down the rails, and then of course the truck comes behind with all the hay behind it, and Rikishi takes one of the most memorable bumps of pro wrestling history that could have went all wrong, and somehow Kurt Angle slithers out of there with the title again. And I think that was just, I mean, it was just, the whole match was just full of amazing spots. It was six men just fighting each other, and throughout the entire match, there was hardly any downtime. And it was absolutely amazing. It was actually one of my favorite Hell in a Cell matches of all time. And I wish that one of these days we get to see another Armageddon-style Hell in a Cell with six people vying for the championship. I wish that we'll see that again one day. I definitely wish that we will see that again one day as far as the Hell in a Cell from Armageddon.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like you never seen that many people in Hell in a Cell. I mean, there was just so much going on constantly throughout the whole match. I almost forgot about that match. But I do remember it was Vince McMahon and the Stooges were trying to run that truck or whatever through the cell to make it collapse or whatever. But, you know, Kurt Angle wins. I mean, that was just classic WWE. I mean, it was almost like a who's who of WWE at the time. Except Rikishi was in there, which is kind of weird. He just didn't fit in with the rest of the crew, but I can see where they were going with that. But, yeah, it was a very memorable. Like I said, I didn't remember it that much. I do now. I've forgotten about it. But, I mean, that's something WWE should really look into doing again soon, especially since they like to use Hell in a Cell as a marquee event now. Why not? Why not make the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view? I mean, something where you got four, five, six people going at it. And there's plenty of room. It would make for a much better show.
Yeah, absolutely. Last trivia question of the night is, what was R-Truth's name in TNA? What was R-Truth's name in TNA? Real quick, my all-time favorite Hell in a Cell match, 1998, King of the Ring. Vince McMahon decided to okay Mick Foley almost killing himself. and Jim Ross made it very, very clear that it seemed like they killed him. And Undertaker and Mankind of 1998 to me, that is a whole different level. Good job, Ron the True Killings. John Crisp, special shout out. John Crisp's got a lot of trivia questions right today. Clyde has as well. Big shout out to John Crisp and Clyde from the WeAreWrestling.net stream. We need some more people to give them some competition next week, because they've answered most of the trivia questions this week. So special shout out to them. But 1998 Hell in a Cell, my personal favorite. It's just a cut above the rest, point blank.
Cut above the rest. It's the end all of Hell in a Cell. It's the end all of the Attitude Era, almost period. I mean, you cannot get any bigger than what that match, what it ended up being. I mean, it's still, to this day, you can't touch it. It's not to be touched. It's like it's the Beatles of wrestling. You can't do it. It was one-time shot. That's what it was. You'll never have that again. Did it perfectly, excellently executed, although Bret Hart had nothing to do with it. But, yeah, the end-all Hell in a Cell match, or even wrestling match, if you want to get down to it. Most shocking thing I think I've ever seen on WWE TV.
Yeah. And to take two spots, the toss off of the top of the cage and then the choke slam through the cage. I mean, wow, that was absolutely. And I saw the Mick Foley documentary they had on the WWE Network, and it was a really good documentary they had, and he really went into some really good details as far as, you know, how that really meant to him and what it really did. But it was absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Cut above the rest. So fun series of Hell in a Cell recaps. Now we're going to go, and for the next minute, we're just going to go real quick. Hell in a Cell predictions for this year. And feel free on through Twitter at Crave Wrestling or through the WeAreWrestling.net stream. We're going to go real quick. Matches. We got Ambrose and Rollins, Hell in a Cell. Who you got?
I've got Rollins winning, unfortunately.
Yep. I agree. Rollins, too. Cena, Orton, Hell in a Cell.
Cena.
Yep, Cena. I as well. Ziggler, Cesaro, Intercontinental Championship.
Ziggler.
Yes, Ziggler as well. Golden Stardust versus Usos.
Goldust Stardust.
Championship. I agree. Goldust Stardust, too. I got AJ over Paige for the Divas Championship.
Yep, AJ's going to win.
Rusev over Big Show for the singles match.
Unfortunately, that breaks my heart. Yes, Rusev will win.
Yeah. I got Nikki defeating Brie Bella for the personal assistant.
Yeah, probably. Whatever.
And lastly, Jesus. I got Sheamus defeating The Miz.
Yep, I've got that too. Good job.
Absolutely. Follow at Crave Wrestling. Until next week, enjoy Hell in a Cell and have a great week. God bless. Daddy loves Elijah. Goodbye.